Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
We're back. It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth?
Oh, you know, I'm going to leave it there.
All right. Are you ready for a spooky week? Ooh.
This sounds really scary. I don't know, man. Are there going to be ghosts?
Zoinks! Roth, we have a very special guest. It's Defector's own Justin Ellis. Say hi, Justin.
Hi, guys. This is already off to an auspicious start. I feel like anytime you have a group of guys together, it's automatically called a podcast. So now it's just officially a podcast.
That's true.
We can tell each other scary stories and make s'mores. I think this will be a great opportunity for us to bond.
Yeah, well, this is not a good opportunity for me because I am a well-known scaredy cat and have zero tolerance for scary movies. So yeah, let's just get into it. I'll be hiding right behind the couch the entire time.
Can I ask you, does scary movies, does like a suspenseful movie count, or are you just talking horror movies?
Because I am enough of a coward, I can't really tell you what the distinction is. I will say though that so my partner Mitu, she loves scary movies, suspenseful movies, whatever you want to say. And so last year, during spooky season, she's like, "Listen, you know I love these types of movies. How about we make a deal that like you don't have to watch any kind of scary movie at all the other months of the year, but in October, as a concession, you will watch scary movies." So we ended up watching Midsummer, which I think was probably more suspenseful, and I enjoyed. We also watched Hereditary by same director, if I'm correct. Yep. And that scared the living shit out of me.
That's a horror movie. That's just a
so there's stuff in that movie that literally like I still see if I close my eyes. But also, you know, shout out to Toni Collette, great actress.
I was thinking of like Seven, which struck me as a suspense movie. I wouldn't call that a horror movie though, but it's like gross and like it's got freaky shit in it. But I don't get.
I think movies like that where the jump scares and the gore are not the drawing attraction. Like I can rock with that. And because we are all gentlemen of a certain age, like, you know, I do remember watching the Creepshow movies from like back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I remember those being more like, oh, this is definitely more of like a spooky situation. And then something jumps out and like it gets scary, but not in the way where the movies today are just like, we're going to actually show you someone chopping up a human body with intricate detail for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I get that. Was there a specific event in your youth that caused you to hate scary movies? Like, did you see Psycho way too young like I did? Or were you just always preternaturally?
Were you attacked by a Freddy as a child?
Yeah.
Growing up in the state of Minnesota, I was attacked by an snowman of some kind, like Jack Frost. A holiday movie, not a horror movie. But no, I think this was just always my predisposition. I wrote something for the newsletter the other day about one of my earliest memories of being terrified of things, and honestly it was the Michael Jackson Thriller video.
Yes!
That
yeah, same.
I watched
actually
when I was, I think, 4 years old, and I made sure to text my mom to confirm this because I was like, I want to make sure that I'm getting this memory correct. And she's like, oh yeah, you were terrified. That probably was not a good thing for you to watch. And I'm like, well,
there was like a whole,
how did you let that happen?
There was like a whole genre of movies like that Channel 11 used to run, the local movie station where I grew up, they would call it Shocktober. And it was movies from that era of the 80s where it was like they were horror movies that were mostly jokes, but there was still like, so you could watch them if you were a kid. And yet, like, there was still enough scary shit in it that, like, I didn't have the capacity to, like, not, you know, to, like, let my guard down and then also bring it back up. So I'd be watching something. I'd be like, oh, this is silly. Like, these guys are in an argument. And then, like, one of them would get disemboweled by a zombie. And I would be, and it was very difficult for me, like, just to, like, sort of toggle back and forth. The Thriller video, it's like half of it is the choreographed Broadway-style dancing by, like, decomposing, you know, like professional dance types. But yeah, like the scares at the beginning and the end were a lot.
Yeah, I had to leave the room during his, like, when he becomes the werewolf in the,
yeah,
like on the walk home or whatever. Like, I, and then I would go back and watch the rest of the video when they're doing the dance and all that stuff. And then at the end, he turns to the camera with the yellow eyes and I would freak out all over again.
Yeah, then it's all over. Then yeah. It's all over. But I think it just, it, I think that set a bad precedent for me because, you know, as another example, and again, I'm dating myself, but I couldn't handle it. I remember not being able to handle it watching E.T. in the latter parts of the film when E.T. gets sick and is like this withering ghost of an alien and his like heart is like this red beating exposed thing. And I was like, this is too close to horror for me in my adolescent brain. Like, this is too much. I'm tapping out. And that basically just set the stage for my entire life. So I can't really handle too much gore. Like, I am a 6'3" man who will fully and willingly hide behind any surface to not watch something scary on the television.
I can't watch.
I respect that you've embraced that identity as an adult. That you're not like, yeah, I don't, it doesn't happen to me anymore. Now you're like, no, I just don't like being scared, so I'll go into another room.
Listen, I think we need to be able to expand the definitions of masculinity and
to include cowardice.
To include, yeah, like seriously, listen, Shaggy had it right. I know you guys were riffing before, but Shaggy had it right. Like, if Fred wants to be the macho alpha, like, let him walk through that door. Let him do that. Like, let me just hang back in the van with this dog and get really high and eat some snacks.
Did you,
like,
say
that's fine?
Did you say Shaggy?
No, we're not. I don't think we're gonna do that one.
I'm not.
That's a different Shaggy.
I'm not here for this.
Like, whoa, Scoob. That's my Shaggy. That's as good as I can get. Okay.
Casey Kasem is rolling in his
Yeah, brain. That was Casey Kasem's voice.
He was fantastic. He was really, yeah. And he did Shaggy too. He did the fucking dog. Couldn't believe
it. That's the joke.
Hey, speaking of horror movies, the World Series. How about the ending of the World Series?
Effortless.
I would say this is an emergency podcast, but it's going to air like a day or two after otherwise triumphant return to form for the Dodgers for the first World Series since 1988 turned into a goddamn super spreader event because Justin Turner had an inconclusive COVID test in the second inning, which is weird enough. And then it came back positive in the fucking eighth. And then he was quarantined for what, 8 minutes before they won the game. And he came back out onto the goddamn field and he took his fucking mask off for a team photo. I shouldn't be surprised by any of this, and I'm really not. And yet, it's just like, Roth.
Yeah. I've had a hard time formulating a take, if I'm being honest. It just fucking bums me out.
Yeah. What's the take? Is there a take out of this, Justin? Or is it just, I want to go barf into a metal bowl.
I mean, I think the take is what we've all known. And if there's a place to explore this take, it is defector.com. Make sure to go subscribe right now, kids.
Defector.com.
Defector.com. Use the special offer code Drew's Making Voices. But no, I mean, I think the take is that, like, all that matters to any league, whether it is the NFL, whether it is MLB, whether it is the NCAA, is just putting the product out. And I don't want to go down the road of any kind of conspiracy theories about all of these things and about, like, what MLB knew and when. But the fact is very simple that if this guy got a test, you should hold him back no matter what. There should be no pleading with it. There should be no, this guy deserves to be out on the field. Like, it doesn't matter. And I think the thing that continues to be baffling to me just outstandingly baffling is that athletes know that COVID basically is just like a randomizer for what it does to your internal organs and your capacity to like breathe and for your heart to operate. And any one of them taking a chance with that and what that will do to their future prospects seems insane to me. So I think the take is that this was obviously demonstrably bad, but MLB let this happen. The Dodgers organization let this happen, and they should all be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree on that, just in terms of it. Expecting like a pro athlete to make a good individual choice is like it's a nice thing to expect. If you think that that's a thing worth expecting, I personally will not expect that ever from a pro athlete. But like you have to, it shouldn't necessarily be in their hands. Like it feels like an institutional failure. It is an institutional failure that goes well beyond MLB itself. But it just sucks to have it like kind of rubbed in your face. Ray wrote about it this morning and used the phrase victory without joy. And I think like there clearly was a lot of joy on the Dodgers' part. It's just like it's really hard to feel good about having watched that World Series right now.
Yeah. And the other thing was Manfred after the fact, like he did an interview. I believe it was Tom Verducci. I couldn't quite tell if it was Tom Verducci because Tom Verducci was wearing a mask. Manfred wasn't. And everyone was like, is Rob Manfred drunk? Because he was like slurring his words. And then he was saying, like, I'm so sick of hearing the, you know, it's a season like any other, unlike any, like just saying like, oh, it was so unusual and there was such adversity and all this shit. and then he goes out to give out the trophy and everyone in the stadium's booing the living shit out of him. And these are people who aren't wearing masks themselves. These are like lunatic Texans who are openly flouting the fucking COVID thing, and they're booing the shit out of Rob Manfred because even they think he's irresponsible. So if you've pissed off that crowd, it's just a remarkable feat of fuckery on your part.
It's also worth mentioning that there's any number of good reasons to boo Rob Manfred. If they were booing him because they thought he was being irresponsible, that would be great. If they're booing him because he was in charge of baseball, like, or, you know, booing him for the same reason that, like, I don't know, you might boo Vince McMahon if you went to a wrestling event. Like, that's fine, too. Like, just follow your heart. Just don't clap, you know? Light him up. He did get fucking... That was a delight. One of the few things to feel okay about at the end of the game was Manfred absolutely getting torched by
the
fans.
You know why it was good? It was because everyone boos Goodell, and Goodell's so used to it, it just bounces right off of him. Like, Goodell doesn't give a shit. But Manfred doesn't have the experience of the booing process down the way that Goodell had. So you could tell he was a little shook, Justin. A little shook.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you are the commissioner of a pro sports league, your soul has to die.
Oh yeah, you don't get an interview for the job if they think that there's like an active, you know, ethical compass.
I'm pretty sure that to get at that level, at some point you are taken by the board of governors to the precipice of a volcano and asked to throw a kitty or a puppy in.
I remember.
And now we trust you to negotiate a collective bargaining agreement.
Basically, it's like this: the kitty you see before you is actually a player. It's a veteran. No one cares if it lives or dies. Do what you must.
I remember somebody I knew interviewed at Huffington Post. I think I've told this story before. This is back when like it was actually run by Arianna Huffington and her cabal of like sleep enthusiasts or whatever the fuck. And the interviewer asked, you know, do you consider yourself a competitive person or do you work well with others or do you consider yourself more a competitive person? And the guy was like, oh no, I like being a team player. I like working with other people. You know, I appreciate feedback and then giving it to other people. And then they said, yeah, no, that's actually not what we're looking for. We want people who are competitive and want to get that certain edge. And he was like, what the fuck kind of place is this?
Yeah.
So Rob Manfred could have worked at Huffington Post. Very, very.
Yeah, he's got those like eat what you kill vibes, like, which is, and that was his role. I remember going back, back at the old site, writing about, you know, basically the option of forcing out the Wilpons as owners because they were derelict and also because I didn't like them or whatever. And I used as an example for that, the MLB had a leadership has basically never forced an owner out. But the last one they did was the person that owned the Dodgers before the current group did.
The McCourts.
Yes, Frank McCourt. And in that case, it was like they basically got rid of McCourt because he had went off on his own and renegotiated the team's TV contract because he was gearing up for an extremely expensive divorce from his wife.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, just fantastic people all around. But the person that did all the, like, the hammer for Selig in all of that was Manfred. That was, like, his, basically how he put himself on deck to become the commissioner was that he was, like, the designated asshole for...
He was the goon.
Yeah.
He was the hired goon.
Yeah. Which, no. And they were like, this is a guy we can trust, because, like, he certainly will smash someone's dreams if, like, the owner of the pirates tells him to do it.
I think...
Yeah. I think overall, the it's incredible that the lasting thing from this will be what happened with Turner, and not the Rays just completely imploding by giving up the starting pitching when they didn't need to, you know, when you got to just ride the pitching out. And instead we're talking about the fact that the Dodgers are now a super spreader event.
Yeah. I was going to say, I love a good managerial fuck up in the World Series, and Kevin Cash pulling Blake Snell after Snell had thrown what, four pitches.
Like, yeah. This was a really good series for that too, that this was like, you know that video where the guy's like, you can't do it on concrete, and then he like tries to do a dance move and just lands on his head?
Yeah.
This was like Dave Roberts and Kevin Cash doing that back and forth in like a battle format, like basically managing wise for the entire series.
Yeah, I
wanted
Kevin
that, Cash had the last one.
I want that to be the headline. I don't need to hear Grady Little's name ever again. I need someone to usurp that so that we just have a go-to reference for a manager just completely bonering a World Series.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Justin?
Yeah. It was fun whenever they would cut to the dugout and you just see the seething that is taking place on the Rays bench. And it's just like, I don't know what Cash is going to do after this. You know, it's like, oh, man, what is Cash going to do? He's got to go back to that clubhouse and they might actually kill this man.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has that feeling of like, Snell, too, is also, like, kind of a spicy baseball dirtbag, like, in, like, a good way, like, the good kind of dirtbag. But he's, like, he'll, like, go on Twitch in, like, a month and say something way out of pocket about this. And, like, that's, I mean, that's fine, too. That is how they're, you know, how we deal with things now. But to me, like, the idea that it was shaping up as, like, you know, the different conversation we could have been having today if Justin Turner does not do all the things he did or test the way that he did would be like, it would be like a cheesy rerun of the whole like analytics versus actual baseball stuff. And that was like what A-Rod was apparently pushing after the game. And this idea that like Cash was sort of like following the, you know, the spreadsheets by pulling his pitcher after 70 odd pitches and 5 1/3 innings. And like, I don't really think that there's a spreadsheet that suggested that either. I think it was managing to a script. I think that's like basically what the Rays have always done. And Snell hasn't pitched deep in games this year very much. And, you know, that's, I suppose, like if it was your reflex that you're like, well, it's a sixth inning. It's time to get this guy out of there. He's already thrown, you know, 104 pitches when he's thrown, you know, 30 fewer than that. Then like, that's just being jumpy. That's getting nervous in a World Series. Like it's like what Drew said, like just an old fashioned fuck up.
Dude, I do an old. It was that hook. Yeah, I think a lot of people mistook it for analytics. And like I've crossed that Rubicon where, you know, I used to read Fire Joe Morgan all the time, and you know, and joke about all the fucking old newspaper guys who would bitch about analytics and all that stuff. Like, oh, nerds are taking over the sport. And then, you know, and then the Astros happened, and it's like, oh my God, look at these private equity,
yeah,
bastards. I'm not saying. I'm not calling them nerds because they're different somehow, even though they basically did the same shit nerds would have done.
Yeah.
Because they're rich, because they won. I mean, what's
yeah.
the difference?
No, but also I think because they're like, are McKinsey dudes nerds to you, or are they like like supernatural creatures,
I'm
vampires?
Just saying,
I think actually they are some, if this was like a role-playing game, it would be like they're some sort of hybrid between a jock and a nerd.
That's what I was going to say.
That is ultimately like a vampire, you know, where it's like they definitely will have the presentation of a jock, right? But they will actually try to like do jock shit through numbers on yeah. you, you know?
That's yeah. something that I think we maybe couldn't have imagined when we were growing up and getting, like, the whole, like, slobs versus snobs and, like, you know, like, nerd comedy things, is that, like, nerd bullies are actually the worst of both worlds.
Yeah.
And that's, like, what we're, that's, like, Astro shit, full and stop.
That's pop culture now, too. Like,
yeah, I mean, absolutely.
We've had, I mean, that take has been around now since the 2010s.
Release the Snyder Cut. You yeah, heard it here.
Those guys.
Oh, dude, and that's going to cost Warner an extra $70 million to,
I don't even,
to
I don't
recut
even
a
because that. They have to like digitally add rain to every shot in the film, like even interiors.
His vision demands it. They've got a special filter that is just like the sort of despair filter. Like we need to push and wash that over every frame of this film.
I love the idea that it's like so dark that you have to get like special, whatever the opposite of 3D glasses are. Like in order to see any of the images on screen, you have to wear those. So it must be experienced theatrically.
Yeah, the right.
I love that there was in one of the reporting pieces on it recently. It was like they're going to end up spending, because I think there was an interview with the head of HBO Max, but you know they're going to end up spending something like $30 million. Or more, probably more on this, for a subscription service that like has somewhere around, I want to say like less than 10 million subscribers, 5 million, something like that. And it's an absurd number.
It's really it's 70 million. It's $70 million.
It was going to be 30, and now it's looking like 70, which is I mean, it's a fucking ransom payment, too. It is like a full-on, like a Twitter ransom payment.
It's funny because I had to watch the Entourage movie for a GQ assignment, and I enjoyed the Entourage movie because my expectations were nothing. But the plot of the Entourage movie was that Vinny Chase was allowed to make a $100 million movie, but he needed an extra like $15 million for effects, and that was the conflict of the movie. That was like the crisis, and of course he got it at the end, and then they made the fucking movie. But I remember being like, "That's the plot point. Okay, we got 2 hours of that."
Those were simpler times.
Yeah, in screenwriting terms, you would call that like, what is the reason for Jeremy Piven to yell slurs into a Motorola phone? And that's like, you start with that, and then you build the whole plot backwards from there.
That's amazing. They're going right. to put $70 million extra in the movie. The movie's still going to look like shit. It's going to be longer than Once Upon a Time in America. And like, you were talking about like the old movies on like Channel 11. Was that PIX, by the way? Is that
It was PIX.
PIX, where like those movies freaked me out, like Fright Night and stuff like that, because since I'm being an old fart, like the old horror movie effects freaked me out because they were analog effects. So, you know, they were done with makeup and they were done with like Rick Baker, like, you know, gluing individual hairs onto like someone's like eyeballs and shit like that. And that all freaked me out. The computer stuff, I'm just like CGI horror, I just can't. I don't give a shit. I can't. It doesn't faze me one way or another. Except I still
Snyder's
watch
one
movies.
Of those guys where knowing that there's people that think he's a genius makes me feel insane.
Yeah, it's just bad standards, you know?
I liked the first movie he made was a Dawn of the Dead remake, and I think it's super fun and good. Like, you can really see that he has talent, but he's just been indulged in all of these ways that, like, to me, I don't understand how you could see it. Like, I don't understand how you find that in the experience of watching his movies. Like, it doesn't compute for me.
No, I was a very small, lowercase d defender of Man of Steel because I thought that he was trying to do something interesting in that, where if you treat Superman's arrival as like a Earth First Contact alien story, it's like, oh, this yeah. is actually an interesting take that like we haven't seen before. And then, you know, because it's a Superman movie, you got to like mix in all the dad feel shit. And you know, I'm sure that Zack Snyder just thought that he was making his like Field of Dreams, but then he just gave in to his impulses and it turned into a loud, noisy orgy of like chaos and destruction. And I think that's just been his template forever. And I think it's the latter that people latch onto and say, it's gritty, it's real, it speaks to this era yeah. that we are in. And I don't think it speaks to the era that we are in good ways.
I yeah. always like that people are like, I just like that it's so dark. And like, it's only because it's literally dark. Like, they mistake, like, dark, like a total absence of competent lighting as like a proper mood setting. I just love the tone of it. I love everything's so washed out, and I can't actually see like 5 feet past any character. It's like Clint
People
Eastwood.
Say they like dark movies, but like don't understand that that's like a word that means another thing. Like they literally think it means like movies that are set at night.
Yeah, like they borrowed a set that Clint Eastwood was using after Clint Eastwood had done his three takes for the day and taken a fucking nap.
It's one spotlight.
Hey, I have breaking news for you, Justin. This will not be breaking by the time this posts, but Wisconsin has announced via Heather Dinich that it will pause all team-related activities for at least 7 days, and their game against Nebraska will not be played. That's because all their quarterbacks got coronavirus. Literally all their fucking... And the thing
well, to be fair, like one of them injured the first string quarterback injured
hurt
his foot.
But, yes.
But then the other two, came down with COVID. And I don't know about you gentlemen, but I have not been able to stomach college football at all this year. And
no, can't do it.
It enrages me. I'm doing the Madeline Kahn from Clue thing now, like flames right. out of the side of my face, because we all know as a bedrock that the NCAA is a scam, and every time that they talk about being stewards of young people and that old commercial campaign of they're all going to go professional in something other than their sport, it's all trash.
Yes,
but the fact that they can't on a very basic level look out for the health and well-being of these students is the thing that kind of pushed me over the edge this year. Because again, going back to what we were talking about with the Dodgers, Justin Turner, at least if it is actually confirmed, and I think it is at this point that he has COVID, you know, he's at least had a career. And if he has lasting health effects because of that, he's had a career. If the second or third string quarterback from Wisconsin end up with having heart murmurs, lung problems, you have ruined this person's life. And at what cost? For the TV revenue of a Big Ten matchup? It's absurd.
It kills
me
too.
That's a lot of TV revenue though.
It kills me too because they canceled their season. And Kevin Warren, the commissioner, got pressured back into restaging it after Nebraska and Nebraska parents pissed and moaned and said, this needs to happen. And he got pressured into changing his mind. And now they started the season and they're not going to stop it. Like, they're just not going to stop it. And it's going to be the same as the pro sports. But like you said, Justin, at least with the pro sports, you know, they're paid, they're grown professionals. They have their careers. They're in the midst of their professional careers and their lucrative careers. This is totally different because there's no central management at all. There's very little chance of most of these guys becoming professionals and becoming rich. And they're not getting paid and they're certainly not getting educated. Like they're not going to fucking class. So it's like, it just kills me that I know this is going to keep going. They're going to play out the season. They're not going to cancel college football. It just drives me nuts, Justin.
There's something... Well, go ahead, Justin.
No, I think the only thing that I would add to that is that I think what we're seeing is that these programs are just incredibly mismanaged and incredibly cynical to the point where... even though they have a different standard of testing than say like the rest of the campus, it still doesn't matter because the logistics of trying to put on college football, it seems like you still expose these kids to so much risk that it doesn't matter how you try to mitigate it. And it makes me so angry to think that this is something that happens and it's something that you know, people are going to be okay with. I think about some of those early games in the season and sort of the trajectory of college football right now where you have coaches saying, open up the stadiums, you know, and there was the...
Dan Mullen did that, the piece of shit.
Yeah.
Then he got COVID. because there's no metaphors anymore.
Nope.
But then you also had the game where there was the student section, and I can't remember what game it was.
A&M.
Yeah. You know, the student section goes nuts. They had to break it up. They're dumping beer on the field and on you know, receivers scoring touchdowns. And it's just like, what? I don't know. There comes a point when it becomes too much to bear that this is all for the sake of entertainment. You know, I think people talk about like Rome burning a lot and talk about analogies there, but there's something very disturbing and disgusting about the fact that this disease continues to rage on in a lot of the corners of the country where college football is a religion, and they act as if nothing is happening and we're putting kids' lives on the line.
It's that last bit that gets me so much. I mean, I just feel like people are still dying in fucking droves from this 9 months in, and or whatever, eight. And that experience of it, like the trauma of, you know, each of those individual deaths, but then also like what it means in these communities where, you know, 100 people die in a state, you know, in a city or whatever every day, and, you know, thousands across, you know, 1,000 in the country. Like, that is meaningful shit, and it's just not in the conversation anymore.
Yeah, the
like, this is now, because it's the idea, I don't know if it's the assumption that these aren't people you know, that these are people who have to be, you know, like, working in a store or playing college football for you, that they're people that serve you, the protagonist of reality, or if it's just, you know, what something that Drew and I were talking about, a piece by Wallace Shawn that I'll link in the blog under this, that basically, that people don't want to care about other people, and that there's something liberating now about the idea of just forgetting it, turning it off.
That's right.
But whatever it is, man, it fucking sucks to watch.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because the, you know, like the people who have died so far have been largely invisible. And there have been people talking about, like, we don't have any tributes to them. We don't even have a memorial up yet, even though I assume there has to be one at some point. But also the people who survive it and have terrible, terrible symptoms that could be permanent and permanently crippling, they're also invisible. And those college players, like, and a lot of other professional athletes, even Justin Turner, they may also have heart and brain dysfunction. And I've had a dysfunctional brain and I still have one, so I know about this shit. And the idea that, you know, that they're just going to live with this, and they will do so in the shadows because people got what they wanted out of them early on, kills me. Because I keep thinking, like, and I said it this morning, but I don't really believe it. I was like, it's going to take someone famous dying for, like, yeah, people to wake up and fucking get it. Like, it's going to take, like, Tom Brady dying of coronavirus for him to get it. But they don't die because they have access to the best resources. Like, fucking Trump gets it and then, like, licks every doorknob in the White House. And then he gets flown to Navy Med a mile away from my house. And they shoot him full of fucking radioactive, you know, spider venom or whatever. And now he's all fine. And it's like, people just don't get it because they're not seeing the consequences in real time of people they know who are prominent actually suffering and dying from this disease. So,
Drew, I don't know if you know this, but America doesn't do consequences.
No!
We're not real big on that one.
No!
I think the thing that I mean, to what you were saying, it's really, because our memories are so short right now, but this all got real for me, and I think for many people, back in March when everything was shutting down. And one of the first people we find out who gets diagnosed is Tom Hanks.
Yeah!
America's dad got
the
COVID
actor,
early
Tom Hanks.
On. Beloved actor Tom Hanks, known for such movies as Splash and Bachelor Party. but, you know, for me, that's like, we got to take this seriously. But no one cares. But just back to college football real quickly for just one second, because this was reminding me of a conversation I had recently with a friend who covers college football. And we were debating this, and he said, you know, one of the things that is overlooked is that sadly a lot of the athletes are looking at this and saying, I have to have my shot to play. They don't want – they to think about putting it off to them is – insane, and, you know, either neglects the immediate needs to their career or to their family, and there is obviously something that is real about that. There's obviously something that is wrong with that, but that's sort of one of the factors that, again, if we're talking about the role of institutions, whether it is the Dodgers or whether it is the Wisconsin Badgers, at some point you have to step in and stop people. And I think, again, that's what it all comes back to.
Yeah, or tell people what to do. Give people some framework so that they can make a responsible choice or not, but at least understand what the options are. We haven't even done that.
All right, we're gonna take a break. We'll come right back.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
All right, we're back. Justin, you ready for your first sip of the poison chalice?
It's just like drinking my first Coors Light. I don't want to, but I did it anyways.
That's right. That's right. That's the manly thing to do. So let's get right
into it. Let's taste the fucking Rockies.
I have two sips for you. But the Dodgers fallout, we had no real takes beyond the obvious of just being horrified by it. But thankfully, we're gonna have some takes this week from other people onto which we can graft our own takes. So from the immortal Alana Rizzo, reporter and host on Sportsnet LA, after the Dodgers victory, she said, Justin Turner is finally on the field holding the World Series trophy. He deserves this so much. Something's missing from that tweet, Alana, I have to say.
He earned it. He earned the right to endanger his friends and family.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you think about the fact that sports trophies literally are designed to be passed around. You could not find a better totem to spread plague throughout a group of people. Here, take this pointy, weird gold object that I have breathed and put saliva and my grubby hands all over that I just got a COVID test back from. Touch it. Go ahead, touch it. Literally. Also, bring your kids on the field, and also your loved ones, maybe your nana. Like, let's get them all down here for this celebration.
And you must kiss your wife. Kiss this surface. Let's kiss this surface together, man.
And it's the ugliest trophy. It's the ugliest sports trophy. It sucks.
At least you can't drink out of it or anything. Like, the Stanley Cup thing is like, that felt like the first act of a horror movie to me. Like, it's a testament to how that bubble worked. But it's like, they're just the biggest, like, sports yutzes that have ever existed. All these, like, Canadian gourds out there that, like, do not obey any rules or laws. And they're like, yeah, drink out of it. Like, then give it to your buddy so he can drink out of it. Like, and somehow it seems like no one really got sick from that.
It kills me because these guys care about their bodies. Even baseball players, like, they're like, you know, they spend the entire offseason, like, carefully calibrating their muscle mass and all this shit.
But baseball players are also notoriously dumb. I mean, how many of these guys are also fans of like, well, I'm not going to change out my jock strap because it's been lucky for me, or I'm not going to change the way I part my hair because the last time I did that, I was in a batting slump. You already see a version of this with some of the quotes from the other Dodgers players saying, oh, he deserves to be out here. You know, it doesn't sit well with me that he's not out here. Tough shit.
Yeah.
There is going to be a chance for him to celebrate. I don't know if you guys know this, but as the now winners of the World Series, you can dictate whenever you want to celebrate. It's no one's going to take the title away from you. All you had to do was lock that man in a broom closet, and then a month from now, in sunny LA, you can be like, we're going to celebrate with Justin Turner.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad for him, honestly. Like, I always liked Justin Turner. He was the Mets waived him because the ownership didn't like him. That was a long time ago. That was before he became like a, you know, whatever, star quality player on a World Series champion. I'm not going to get into that. There's no reason to talk about it. But
too late.
As much as I feel badly, you know, for him in that regard, like the idea that like somehow it's not real if he's sick or whatever, that, you know, that like the issue is that other people could get sick from this stuff and not be taken care of as well as him. A lot of people could. And that's like just really, that's got nothing to do with deserve. Like, it's not like the clubhouse attendant that has like shitty insurance, like normal person insurance, who maybe gets sick as a result of all this. Like, they don't deserve to get sick any more than he, you know, has a right to be out there. Like, it just, this is a thing everybody does for everybody else, or they don't.
That's what kills me. It's like, oh, I can't miss this. It's like, how much shit have the rest of us missed for a year? A year. I've seen my parents once. I was going to see my parents this fall again, but my mom got a little too freaked out by the spike, so I can't see my parents again. I haven't seen my sister. I haven't seen my brother, you know, since the summer. Like we've all missed a lot of shit, and we're all, a lot of us are sucking it up, and the other people who aren't are making us suck it up longer, and that is what pisses me off. Your next drink from the Poison Chalice is from Matthew Iglesias of Vox, who's just an endless fount of poison and shit.
A burbling spring.
We got a deleted tweet out of the man, Justin. This one he deleted after Michelle Duggar was confirmed to the Supreme Court. said, I almost feel dumb saying this, but I feel like Roe versus Wade being overturned is going to be a really big deal in politics in a way that's kind of getting overlooked right now. Yeah, no one's noticed that except every goddamn woman in America, you idiot.
It's absolute Bill Simmons energy. I love that post.
Yes.
I think that Maddie here is like suffering from a case of terminal DC writer brain.
Yes.
Which is that, you know, this thing that is being constantly covered and a thing that is on the minds of many women, if not all women in this country, and to say people who support, see, and love women, it is on their minds as well. To say something to this degree just shows how ignorant and insular you are. To say like, oh, this thing is being covered, but I don't know if people quite get it yet. Because the thing that is locked inside that is him sort of saying, well, I've got a nugget of wisdom and I'm going to share it at some point because this hasn't been fully delved into.
Yeah. Like, it's not been covered until it's been covered by Matt Iglesias.
It's definitely a sister take to like, no one cares about the Hatch Act outside of Washington when like there are like polls saying like, actually, yeah, people don't actually want the president staging political rallies like from his goddamn balcony. So,
yeah, I mean, it's similar. I think there's the difference that I would point out with this is that it's like it's a specific type of like Voxy energy that like he embodies more than anyone else, which is that like there's no problem in the world that cannot be understood by somebody with an undergraduate degree from Harvard or Yale and like and better explained to like normal like people who like maybe I wouldn't be able to understand it because I went to a smaller school further away on the other coast or whatever. And so, like, they'll just sort of take you aside. And, like, the idea of Matt Iglesias, like, who's not an idiot but is not nearly as smart as he believes himself to be, just, like, sitting America down and being like, now, Roe v. Wade, it's a pretty big deal. And, like, you know, flipping the chair around and sitting down backwards and, like, rapping at you about it.
Full yeah. After school special.
Yeah,
vibes.
Seriously.
Hey, kids, I hear that you've got some questions about the Supreme Court. Let me wrap with you.
Yeah.
I think that I feel like the problem is that this speaks to like a line of thinking that says, you know, like you're saying, Roth, like, oh, this isn't going to be understood or settled until I make a hit on CNN's State of the Union or until I talk with Chuck Todd about it on
right.
Meet the Press. like what planet, or perhaps what even alternate universe do you live in where this has not at the most, or I should say at the least, been a constant drumbeat since Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death? I cannot fathom the depths of stupidity that it takes to even yeet something like that into Twitter, especially when your brand is supposed to be thinker.
Yeah.
It's been the major campaign issue of my lifetime. I'm 44. I've never not heard people arguing about it.
This is the thing that's incredible about it, though, too. And this is like the Simmonsy part of it to me, is that like it really shows you what he's reading, who he's talking to, whatever, that like this is something that like I think he earnestly believes that like nobody's talking about this or nobody's talking about it correctly or whatever. In the same way that like because Bill Simmons has only spoken to the same five people for the last 30 years, he's like always coming up with these very obvious like sort of like basketball takes that strike him as like bolts from the blue that right. must be shared. You know, he's right. like, "You guys notice this Luka Doncic guy? He's really got it."
Yeah, like, there's never any intellectual overlap between like people. Like any idea he has or Matt has is the first idea that time that idea has ever been like conceived of.
Yeah,
I feel like what we're doing right now essentially recreates the atmosphere that he is in. Basically, three guys in a room talking about Roe v. Wade.
Yeah,
his experience of this.
Aren't we talking about what we talk about when we talk about Roe v. Wade? Isn't that a little more?
Are we saying Roe v. Wade exists? Is that what we're saying?
But first,
time for the mashup. Are you ready to be subjected to the mashup, no. Justin?
Don't no. do it.
All right.
I actually would like to hit the ejector button right now if I
Tough
could.
Tough shit. You get the mashup. Here we go. It's only last June when her old man ran away. Couldn't stop crying because he knew he was gone to stay with me. Cause you're all I need. What two artists are that?
I'm sorry, I'm bleeding from my eyes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
That's an acceptable answer.
I can't begin to decipher that. I'm just going to say Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. And
who's Diplo. The second one?
And Diplo. I have no idea.
Roth, can you guess?
The second one's Sam Smith, right?
That is correct. That's Sam Smith. Stay with me.
First one I got nothing on. I got to be honest with you.
The first one is my favorite song by Prince. It's I Could Never Take the Place of Your Man.
Oh,
Prince.
Wow. All right. I guess it's...
So you're saying you butchered the hell out of that.
is that a little... That was like some Minnesota on Minnesota violence that Justin That's had right. to endure yeah. beyond the sonic assault.
I forgot yeah. to tell you that Justin is from Minnesota. He's a Vikings fan, so you're fired, Roth. This is a Vikings podcast.
Cool.
Now.
yeah, at least you guys were kind of passive-aggressively nice about it. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
we are now going to talk about the Randall Cunningham era of the Vikings for 45 minutes.
Roth, you did a really good job being a podcast host for a guy from New Jersey. So.
Well, I can't tell if I'm being insulted or not, so thanks.
Your guy of the week in honor of Todd Gurley is Ahmad Bradshaw, who famously avoided scoring in the Giants' last Super Bowl victory over the Patriots. Todd Gurley against the Lions last week, not so fortunate. It ended up losing. The idea of the Atlanta Falcons choking is quite standard, really. But them doing it to a team coached by Matt Patricia blows my mind. And all because Todd Gurley scored a touchdown. Just a remarkable feat.
True AFC North hour, or NFC North hours there.
Do you have fond memories of Ahmad Bradshaw, Roth?
Yes, of course. I mean, every Giants running back is special to me. Ahmad Bradshaw was actually kind of good in a lot of ways. Like there's a type of running back that the Giants liked for the longest time, like Brandon Jacobs or Derek Ward, or these kind of just like rectangular guys that thought that like Dick cutting word. Would be like that was like unethical or like cowardly. Bradshaw was kind of like shifty and like he was a little bit more fun to watch. I generally got some joy out of him.
He was a good football player. Justin, did you enjoy the Ahmad Bradshaw years?
Sure, why not? I'll cop to that.
I thought you were gonna give Justin a Viking.
No, I mean, listen, if we're going to play remember some Giants running backs, like, do we have to talk about Thunder and Lightning? Is that where this podcast is going?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I was good. That was, yeah, Ron Dane. And who was, oh God, Tiki. Who was the other one?
Tiki
oh,
and Barber. Tiki.
But did Tiki play with Bradshaw too, or was that a different running back tandem?
The Bradshaw overlapped with, not with Derek Ward, but with, geez.
Right?
It might have been like end stage Tiki. That's
oh,
possible.
You know what? It was with Brandon Jacobs, the immortal Brandon mm-hmm. Jacobs. That's
oh, wow.
The beast. He was such a beast for like 4 months, maybe? Something
yeah.
Like
one that. Of the most mysterious items I found at Goodwill, which is that segment. I know our readers and listeners love to hear me talk about going to the garbage store. A Brandon Jacobs Giants jersey that someone had just like clearly by hand just removed the nameplate from the back of it.
Like they were, ripped it off?
Ripped it off or cut it off with like an X-Acto knife. I don't know what happened. Whatever it was, they were like, love the jersey, love the number, cannot abide Brandon Jacobs, can't even see his name on it.
Were there like frayed stitches still
yes.
left? Like where
yeah,
the
like it looked like it had been chewed off. Like it was, there's something really like cursed about the garment.
Like a chalk outline of a murder victim on the fucking sidewalk. You want a fun bag question, Justin?
Yes, sir.
This is from Claire. This is awfully ringer-esque, but I put it in here anyway. My friends and I have been having a weekly remote Nicolas Cage movie night almost since the beginning of the whole shitstorm. We're on week 28, and just like the Rona, there is no end in sight. Nick Cage has made many movies, but even this far in, we have not been able to crack the central Cage enigma. Is he good? Or is he bad, Justin?
Oh, I mean, that's an easy question. Listen, reader, I want you to get real close. Sit down, I'm going to rap to you. Nicolas Cage is objectively good. And I'm going to make my case not from like mid-stage or late stage, but early stage, because honestly, Raising Arizona is perhaps one of the funniest movies of all time.
Yes.
And his performance in that and pairing with Holly Hunter is outstanding to watch. And I know a lot of people get traction out of like the fact that Cage, what was it? It was the same year that he did Leaving Las Vegas. Was it The Rock or whatever it was?
It was either like, The Rock or Con Air. Both yeah. movies I liked, by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah, and so we are obviously veering very dangerously into ringer territory with this, but I think the man is good. I think that the man also knows exactly what he is and what he's doing in this late stage. And I think that there is something really, really fun to watch with that. If you cannot get a kick out of just watching something as silly and harebrained as like National Treasure, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with you. I think he just has a lot of fun. And there's nothing wrong with that. And to me, in some ways, it's almost like he harkens back to a kind of leading man from like the 50s and 60s who it's like, I'm just the guy who makes this type of picture. And
right.
I'm okay with that. And, you know, I think we could use more of that. Like if Channing Tatum wanted to be that guy, he could be that guy. And I appreciate Nicolas Cage for all of his efforts.
Yeah, he's a great actor. And I've never... I'm someone who hated Leaving Las Vegas and had to watch it in alcohol education after I was arrested for DUI 11 years ago, and I still hated it then.
Wait, they made you watch that? They assigned you that movie?
Yeah, we had to watch it.
All of it?
We had to watch all, because each meeting was an hour, so we watched it over two sessions over the course
so
of a week.
So the state was
I'm
like,
sorry, so,
it's got yeah, nudity I'm, in it.
Okay, but also, why is the state trying to teach people lessons in the same way that a substitute teacher tries to kill hours?
Yeah,
what the hell is that about?
I don't know. To my credit, I never had a drink and drove again, but still, it was not. I would not consider it an ideal form of alcohol education. But Nicolas Cage is a great actor. He's never made a movie worse, in my opinion. And if he's gonna make a bad movie, he's at least gonna make the bad movie more interesting.
Yeah, that's the thing I would say in his defense is that like he's been in, like I haven't seen as many of the like really late stage, like the sort of like Ghost Rider era or like Drive Angry and stuff where he's not even like twitching and being weird anymore, where he's just kind of like medicated looking, and is just, you know, speaking in like wearing shades indoors and all that shit.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But when he was in like crappier movies, when he was a little more volatile, and I think he still does this every now and then, where he just plays the whole movie in like full spasm in every scene. Like that's, he is adding value to something that would otherwise not have value. And that I respect very much.
Yeah. Those movies where he never blinks. Are yeah. Just real.
He's
winners.
I would also like to put a word in for Mandy, which is excellent and which he is excellent in. Justin, it might be a little scary for you. I don't know. It's not that scary, but he is like, it's the last truly like bizarre Nicolas Cage performance that I've seen. And it's from like 2 years ago.
Well, I will make sure to not put that in my queue.
Email of the week comes from Matt. Justin, he asks, what's the worst possible snack food to eat stale? I'm going with cheese balls. And this has nothing to do with the can of them I left sitting on the counter, lid on, for all the fucking good it did for a week, and then tried to return to during game 6 of the Stars Lightning series. What is the worst snack food to try to eat stale, Justin?
That's a really excellent question, and thank you for that. I feel like, I mean, obviously, anything in the it needs to be crunchy territory is going to be an abomination. I feel like one of them that is so disappointing when it is stale is tortilla chips.
Yeah,
especially if you're like in a mindset where you're like, oh, I just want some chips and salsa or chips and guacamole, or the worst scenario being, hey, I think I've got some chips left, I'm going to make some nachos, right? And then you go to the bag and you discover that they're just this sort of sad in-between state of decay. And you always end up eating more than one just to be sure, out of like that sadness of, I really want this to work. Maybe I just got the one bag chip.
That is too relatable and depressing, because I think I just did that like 2 or 3 days ago. Like with the idea of like eating one chip and be like, that's bad. And then like, be like, well, let's see what's happening with this one. Because that might have, maybe I just got a dud. Maybe I pulled a dud out
distressed,
of the bag.
Maybe that was a distressed asset chip that you
But not to bring it too down, but I think there's also something that happens now because of the garbage fire that is 2020, where, you know, the ability to just say like, oh, well, fuck it, I'm just going to run out and go get another bag of chips, has now turned into the mental exercise of how much do I want the salty snacks to have to navigate the minefield, the COVID minefield. You know, and obviously it's easier in some places like others. Living in New York, there's bodegas everywhere. But still, it's just the hassle of, okay, well, I got to put on the mask, even though I know the mask is good. I got to take all these precautions. Even if I'm at the store, I'm probably going to have heightened anxiety levels. Is it worth it just to make some nachos? I feel like I've gotten to the stage of shopping now that is on the level of pioneers, right? Where it's like, well, I gotta get all my provisions, because if I don't, then I'm not going to be able to make it through the pass when winter comes,
right?
Oregon Trail mindset, that's where you have to get.
I don't have a beef with stale cheese balls, because I've eaten stale cheese balls and still enjoy. I'm more than willing to power through stale cheese balls, particularly like wet cheese balls. Like if I've been in a pool and then I take my wet hand and I dump it into the barrel and I keep eating them, I got no issue with that. My
look at fucking J. Paul Getty over here. What is this scenario you just set up where you're lounging in a pool eating cheese balls?
I have gone in a swimming pool in my lifetime. You know, not every year was 2020. There was a past. Like I did things in the past when you were allowed to do things, and one of them includes swimming and then eating some cheese balls after. Anyway, my answer is a saltine. Just a bad.
Oh yeah, you can't eat
soft.
Those.
Like you bite into a saltine and it's soft, and you're like, oh, like you have to chew a little like to break it. Like it's very.
Yeah, it's weird. Those get
distressing to me.
That is a bad type of stale, because like a bad tortilla chip is like you can kind of taste what it used to be like. It's just lacking one of the attributes that makes it good. A saltine, if it is not crispy, is flour. Like it's just nothing. It's gruel. And
yeah, a bad tortilla chip is actually a tortilla, if I may Mitch Hedberg the joke.
Yeah, that's good. Solid.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's all the delivery. You and Mitch, man. Two masters.
It's a Minnesota podcast now.
Brendan Nix is a producer and engineer. Daisy Rosario is our executive producer. Get better, Daisy. Our theme song is by the immortal Kirk Hamilton. And you can listen to ad-free episodes of The Distraction only on Stitcher Premium. Thanks to us. That includes Justin, because Justin's one of the pirates now.
He's so generous.
You can get a free month of Stitcher Premium right now. Go to stitcherpremium.com. Use the promo code DISTRACT. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever it is that you listen. And go subscribe to defector.com, too. And please vote, because by the time we see you next, there will have been an election. And, God, I hope there's a verdict to that election by the time we podcast. If there's not, we'll be podcasting from our bunker in the, as we avoid the gruesome sweep of the Ghost Army sweeping over the land.
Expect big energy.
Yeah, it'd be great. Justin, you are a fantastic guest. Please come on again soon. And I hope you guys all have a happy and safe Halloween. Eat lots of candy.
Bye.
Good night, America.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.